When I lived in Britain, a friend of mine explained to me how she managed to have cheap holidays in Poland. She booked herself into convents along her routes of travel, where she could stay in a guest house and would only be expected to make a donation on departing. After all, most religious communities are bound by their rule and constitution to offer hospitality to strangers. Indeed, hospitality is a Christian virtue that applies right across the denominational spectrum. Former church warden of mine, who grew up in a Brethren household, explained to me that if you go to a Brethren worship assembly on Sunday morning, the chances are that somebody will invite you back for lunch. You'll end up eating with people you've never met before. Incidentally, my predecessor at St. Mary's Addington used that as a recruiting tool for young people. If they turned up at church at the main service, they'd be invited back for Sunday lunch, and quite a few of them stayed and became church members. A point to ponder, I guess, about church recruitment methods. As you walk into the vicarage, the first picture you'll see on the entrance wall as you come in through the main door is a large icon of three angels sitting around a table. It's arguably the most famous, well, it's a reprint of it, reprint of the most famous icon that's ever been painted by Andrei Rublev, the famous Russian painter. And as he set out to paint the Trinity, that's what the three angels represent, he, having never been a witness of the inner life of God, he chose a scriptural scene to try and depict it. And he chose that scene from our first reading this morning, which is why the icon's called the Hospitality of Abraham, the hospitality he offered to the three angels at the Oaks of Mamre. Well, Abraham, of course, had no knowledge of Trinitarian theology. He didn't realize he was entertaining God himself, but he certainly knew he had very important visitors here, people he needed to make a fuss about. And so he organizes the scratch meal, which is the best possible quality he can manage. And so, as they leave, the visitors leave behind a promise, a blessing, the promise of new life growing in the womb of Sarah, who by now is of advanced age. So this is something of a biological impossibility. But in a way, it's a harbinger of future possibilities of a different life, a new life for us. And it's also, of course, a prefiguring of another biological impossibility about 1,000 years later that's the very cornerstone of our salvation. Mary and Martha are also entertaining a divine guest who they know rather better, although the full significance of who and what he is will not become clearer until a few hundred years of the church's future theological reflection will have taken place. Once again, the red carpet's been rolled out, with two different kinds of hospitality being offered. One, that of attentive listening, and the other, of food preparation. Well, I'm sure in your own experience of entertaining guests, juggling the roles of entertaining the guests and getting the meal ready is always quite tricky if it's just one of you. And you might think that these two have managed to split the functions rather well. But what follows is an aggrieved appeal to Jesus couched in what one commentator calls worry language. Tell my sister to help me. To understand what's going on here, we need to parallel this domestic incident with the gospel story from last Sunday, the story of the Good Samaritan. The priest and the Levite who walked by on the other side of the road in that story, ignoring the obvious and urgent needs of the beaten-up robbery victim, had lost sight of a vital dimension of life with God, the need for love and action. Love needs to be a matter of deeds and not just words. It needs to express itself in practical action and assistance. A piety that's all prayer and worship, all contemplation and mysticism, without rolling up its sleeves to secure the obvious needs of other people, has lost the plot. It's an unbalanced form of religion. This morning, we see piety that's swung in the opposite direction, that's so concerned with practical action, with the horizontal dimension of service of others, that it's lost sight of the importance, the vital importance of the vertical dimension of life with God, of listening to God and of expressing heartfelt devotion to Him. Mary has grasped hold of what we call the transcendent aspect of religion. there's something and someone present in the house that's more important than the immediate need to get food on the table and the obligations of hospitality met. In fact, attentive listening as disciple to master is the vital dimension of hospitality here. And while Martha's concern to do the right thing by the guest appears to be common sense, it is in fact an example of becoming dragged down in the worries and cares of this world, a subject and a theme that Jesus returns to often to warn his followers against. The sense of inner peace that's always a hallmark of being truly in the presence of God and of being in tune with his purposes is more likely to flow from Mary's response to this guest who's coming to dinner situation. So it's a question of balance, of having both dimensions of a lively faith and creative tension that's under discussion here. Maybe we spend most of our life trying to get the balance right, of trying to arrive at the intersection point of the vertical and horizontal dimension of religious faith, a healthy faith. But when we do this, a fuller and richer dimension of life with God opens up and becomes possible. It's unfortunate that we only have two readings of this service, the Colossians reading, the second reading, got one of my favourite verses from the Bible. The mystery is this: Christ in you, the hope of a glory to come. Great summary of the Christian religion. By the way, did you see that recent interview with Donald Trump and his being asked about his newfound enthusiasm for the Christian faith? And one of the journalists asked him what his favourite verse from the Bible was. It's a very personal matter. He said, "I'm not going to answer that question." So anyway, the Colossians quote's one of my favourite ones. As our faith becomes a combination of love and action and of a heart on fire expressed in devotion of worship and prayer, then the life of God takes up residence in us, just as it says in Colossians, and we become reconnected to the sources of divine life. The follow-on consequence of Abraham's hospitality shown towards the divine visitors at the Oaks of Mamre was that Sarah's long-deferred hope of a child is realized. New life begins to grow in her womb. Hope for the future in a true line of biological succession begins to emerge. This is a type of a new hope that begins to grow in us as God looks at us with love and compassion and forgiveness and expectation. We receive a new sense of him, a new sense of identity bestowed as a gift, not out of a sense of reward or return for anything we did. God's perspective on us is the fully realized dimension of our personality and character, as we will have become who we really are meant to be when the new heavens and the earth emerges. He sees who we are on the road to becoming, and the effect of divine grace is to grow the sense of Christ-like identity within us, to propel us towards the future of the glory to come with all the energy that hope brings. When we come to the aid of wounded strangers on the dangerous roads of this world, when we listen to Christ in our homes and in our times of worship in church, then we offer him hospitality that enables him to come and take up residence in us. These are means of being hospitable to God. And when that appears, he is happy to come and stay with us and reside within us. A faith union is formed that lasts until we're ushered into the halls of eternity. There he will be our host forever. Here we trade in the things of this world and make him welcome by kindness shown to strangers and by love and devotion directly expressed to him. Spoken in the name of God, Father, Son, and Holy Spirit.